Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
My next guest has been doing some deep thinking on our destiny. He's got my attention. How much do we all get caught up in thinking about our future? Tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, and beyond? Dr. Michael Jensen has been looking at two entirely contrasting pieces of writing on destiny and the future. For, he says, the destiny of humanity is rushing up to meet us at a speed unprecedented in human history. Human technology is the accelerant of our destiny. Michael Jensen, welcome to Open House. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Michael, it's an interesting and inextricable part of the human condition, I think, that we are so preoccupied with our futures. Do you do much of that yourself, thinking about the future?
Yes, I do. I mean, I wonder what I'm going to do in 10 years' time as a guy in his 40s. I mean, men in their 40s are constantly worrying about their future and their children's future, of course, and how that's going to look. And it's always, of course, with a bit of uncertainty because, you know, I'm embedded in the world as anyone is with, you know, a home loan and all the rest of it. Yep. And those two great E's are really kind of circling around us, those uncertain E's. The one E is the environment. Yes. Everyone says the environment's going bad and what are we going to do with that? That beach house might be underwater in a few years' time. Or the economy, because we're very vulnerable to, you know, the changes in the economy about which we can do nothing. So worrying and thinking about the future is a kind of... I think I do it as much as anyone.
Yeah. So let's look at these writings you've been contrasting. The first is a novel from the British novelist Zadie Smith. Take us into the world that's created in white teeth.
Well, Zadie Smith, she was very young when she wrote this book, around the year 2000. It's interesting that it was written then, that kind of moment when we were thinking about the future. And she's a half Zambian, half English, I believe. She's of mixed ethnicity in England. And she's really trying to understand the mixed identity, the new multicultural world of London in the 21st century, a turbulent world as we now know, a world that's perhaps not as harmonious as you think. And she's trying to ask the question, what's going to become of human beings now with those old identities, those old ethnic identities all mixed in? What's that going to mean for the future? How are we going to go about being humanity in the coming century?
So you say she sets up two of the big questions that face us, even amidst the speed of modern life and technology. The questions are who we are and why are we here. How does she answer that in this book?
Well, she answers that by... I mean, it's a funny book. Please do read this book.
Good.
It's very funny. It's an enjoyable kind of rollicking rollercoaster of... hilarious book, really. And she kind of pits two contrasting answers and then gives her own. The contrasting answers are, well, we're going to take technology and we're going to do something with that. Or she says, perhaps we're going to go back to the... one answer might be that we go back to the old religious traditions and ethnic traditions and we cling to those as hard as we can. But her answer really is, let's just love each other. Let's just not risk things. Let's not be violent. Let's not be... It's an appealing answer in lots of ways. Let's not hate each other. Let's put that aside. Let's not risk destroying each other by our addiction to technology. Let's just be kind and love. And through the kind of love of people one for another, a new race will emerge. I mean, literally, as you know, the races love each other. And so there's lots of multi-ethnic couples in her story.
Yes. Sounds good to me. Is identity therefore to be or not to be found in our cultural identity? Does she find?
Well, she's a little bit wary of these cultural identities and making them absolute. She doesn't want them to be kind of... She wants them to be broken down and not the kind of things that we kill each other over. Mm. And I've got a lot of sympathy for that. I mean, who doesn't? We've seen in our own culture ethnic tensions and religious tensions in our own city in the last 5-6 years. So nobody wants to see... to see that as a feature of the life in the modern city, in modern civilization.
Tell us about the book's Future Mouse Project that says, I think, much about how we think that we can both rule the world and especially our identity.
Well, there's a guy in the book who's really a bit of a mad scientist, and he's designed a mouse which is a sort of genetically modified mouse he's going to introduce to the world. And what he's going to do is he's going to say that you can see life in miniature. You can do experiments on this wonderful mouse and see how life might turn out and how we might be able to change life as we do it. Of course, he's going to unveil this mouse on New Year's Eve, 1999. Mm. And as he does so, though, of course, the mouse escapes, which is kind of the great joke on him. Now, you think this is a sort of a science fiction idea, but in fact, there is really a thing called the Onco mouse, which is a very similar, it's a patented mouse, believe it or not. There's a company that's patented this genetically modified mouse on which they can make experiments, biological and chemical experiments. So it's kind of taken from reality, this this future that she's kind of laughing at the same time.
So does it show we can or cannot rule our identity and determine our destiny?
Well, I think Zadie's making a really... it's a cautionary tale. She's making an interesting point that just when we think we've got technology under control, it sort of escapes like a little future mouse. It runs off.
Shock me.
You know, and I think this is true. We have enormous confidence in our technological ability to solve all the problems that are in front of us. And on the one hand, we ought to have enormous confidence. We've done amazing things. It would be wrong for us just to be sort of paranoid about technology all the time. You know, it's the case that I'd much rather live now than 100 years ago if I'm going to get cancer, for instance, or if I'm wanting to look to travel. But at the same time, our technology, we try and master the world by it, but often it masters us. It gets out of our control and can prove very destructive, as we know.
So our destinies are not nearly as controllable or predictable as we would imagine or as we'd like.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't want the religious fundamentalists or the technological nirvana to come to pass. But she just, I think, it's a rather vague picture where you've got people who just love each other, as I said before. I mean, it's in the end, that's what it boils down to. But it's immensely appealing, isn't it, to invite people to experience and express love in the erotic sense between man and woman and across cultures and divides as we form communities which are not kind of bounded by those old divides or obsessed by technology and trying to control the world.
We're with Dr. Michael Jensen on the future of humanity. Michael, the second piece of writing you've contrasted this is with the Apostle Paul's letter to the Galatians in the Bible's New Testament. How does his outlook and especially his view of humanity differ from Zadie Smith?
Well, the Apostle Paul's a very different person from Zadie Smith. He lives a long time ago, and he's a man living in a different world from a different place. But in one sense, he's got a very similar concern. His concern is that the old way of living life according to your ethnic and religious cultural identity is, in one sense, a prison. It's causes division and tension between peoples. And for him, it separates us. It can deeply separate us from God. What Paul is saying, in fact, is that there is a new way of being human that's been opened up for us. The trouble is, though, Paul reckons that we can't form it or control this new way of being human ourselves. What we need, in fact, is an invasion from the future. We need a man from the future. We need a divine intervention to bring about this change in human beings to make it possible. So the seeds of the problem are within us all. And so he says, well, in fact, this has already occurred. The end of the world has already happened. In fact, just we haven't really noticed it. It happened when Jesus Christ came, when he died, when he rose again. That moment is the moment in which a new way of being human was proclaimed. And what that new way of human is, it is a human community based not on cultural boundaries, but on love. So he's dealing with a bunch of people who are saying, look, to be right with God, you need to perform certain cultural and religious actions. In fact, he's using the example of circumcision. You might know about circumcision. It's the practice that Jews and Muslims and many other cultures have of removing the foreskin of the male penis. And it's a sign, it's a dramatic sign, isn't it, that this race is God's race, belongs to God.
Set apart.
Set apart. I mean, it's got the race where it hurts, right? It's a sign right at the point of generation, isn't it? Where that genealogy is going to be expressing God's favor, that family. And Paul is saying, no, in fact, that's not the way of the future. The way of the future is based on something else.
And the way this is achieved, and it's a threatening thing to us in our own sense of identity and control over present and future. The key to this is really laying outside of our hands.
Yeah, it's not something we can build. This is the illusion. This is the illusion of technology, that it tells us we can actually build a new, great, glorious human future for ourselves if we only get the kind of the science right, if we only do the right test tube experiments. But future mouse keeps running away, and Zadie's right, and of course it doesn't help us to love one another. But her version isn't much better, because it says, "Well, come on, everyone, let's just get together and love." But this is saying something else. This is saying, no, humankind has been changed from the inside. It's been changed by God, by its maker. It's been offered a new way. And so it's like a nuclear bomb has arrived on Earth.
The confronting thing is that he does this as an act of grace and not based on what we do.
Yeah.
That's hard to cope with.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's hard to cope with, because it asks us to not be in control anymore. It actually asks us to acknowledge that we couldn't do anything about it in the first place. We don't like that as human beings.
Yeah. And I'm sure people think, well, how does that work? Just by grace.
Well, it doesn't work in the sense that you mean it. It doesn't. It's not. There's no kind of system. There's no program. There's no kind of 12 steps for you to get to it. You just have to have faith in what God has done. That's what Paul's saying here. It's a community now, a group of people who gather together based merely on the fact that they all believe, they all have faith in what God has done. They recognize it and they admit that they can't do anything.
And it's a hopeful outlook for our destiny that he leaves us with.
It's enormously positive, because it's liberating, right? It actually liberates us to get on with the business of loving each other, because it shows us that those old ways of being, those old cultural identities, those old ways of framing human life, those old dividing walls have now been broken down and now not who we really are, that we really are someone else. And so this is what Christian churches, that when I've experienced them, this is what it's really like, is that we have people from across the spectrum, people who have nothing in one sense in common, humanly speaking, but my goodness, they have something massive in common because of what God's done for them in Jesus Christ. And they can meet together on the basis of that.
So there's hope for our destiny of the future, but also for today, an exercise of love in community and mutual service. What a good place to be, as you say, when that works well.
Yes, yeah. No, it's marvellously liberating, because when you go into a community like that, you're not there on the basis of how well accepted you are in the community, in the society, on some other thing, whether that be your education or the fact that you've got a great job or the fact that your cultural identity is better than someone else's.
Michael Jensen, thank you so much for coming into Open House. It's been great to talk. Thank you. Michael's one of the lecturers in the 2011 New College Lectures, to be held from the 27th to 29th of September at the University of New South Wales, on theology and the future. We'll put their website on our Open House community Facebook page.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.